President Obama's point man, who developed and basically pushed through the PROMESA bill, has criticized this deal. He said in an article in Bloomberg News a couple of months ago, it will just be a question of time before the Commonwealth is forced to default yet again, or curtail pension payments to more than 325,000 workers. So it is unfortunately, Judge Swain felt that legally she did not have the authority to override this, but it does mean that if this is the signal of where the rest of the settlement of the Puerto Rico debt is going toward, the vulture funds and the hedge funds are going to walk away with killings, and the people of Puerto Rico are going to be left once again with increased austerity.
And again, explain what COFINA means.
COFINA is the sales tax authority that Puerto Rico created. Basically, when it could not legally issue more debt, it created a separate authority and siphoned off the sales taxes of Puerto Rico to guarantee the debt to bondholders, which is why Puerto Rico has perhaps the highest sales tax in the United States, 11.5% right now.
Mm. Well, we will continue to follow this. And this all happening after Hurricane Maria.
Right. Using the money that the federal government is giving to Puerto Rico for reconstruction to help pay a portion of this debt, undoubtedly.
We'll go to the vulture funds.
Yes.
To see all our coverage on Puerto Rico, you can go to democracynow.org. A belated happy birthday to Hugh Gran. Democracy Now! Is currently accepting applications for a full-time, one-year paid news production fellowship. Details at democracynow.org. Democracy Now! Produced by Mike Burke, Dina Guzder, Nermeen Sheikh, Carla Wills, Tammy Warrenoff, Sam Alkoff, John Hamilton, Robbie Karen, Hani Massoud, Trina Durate, Maria Studio. Special thanks to Becca Staley, Julie Crosby. I'm Amy Goodman with Juan Gonzalez. Thanks for joining us.
And you are listening to KBOO Portland.
KBOO Community Radio is a proud co-sponsor of the second annual Kwanis Hayes Angel Anniversary on Saturday, February 9th from 5 to 8 p.m. at the former DMV on 82nd Avenue in Portland. This is a candlelight vigil in loving memory of loved one Kwanis Hayes. This event is for the family and friends to remember Moose. On February 9th, 2017, Moose was shot 3 times by police. He was only 17 years old. Bring flowers, candles, and balloons, and stories to the now closed DMV office near the Banfield Pet Hospital on Northeast 82nd. Again, that's the second annual Kwanis Hayes Angelversary on Saturday, February 9th from 5 to 8 p.m. at the former Oregon DMV building, 1836 Northeast 82nd Avenue in Portland. More information can be found at kboo.fm on the right side of the homepage under Community Events.
KBOO Community Radio is proud to co-sponsor Musicians in Mexico City on Wednesday, February 6th at 7 p.m. at the Clinton Street Theater in Portland. Musicians in Mexico City is a night of experimental music hosted by Buenas Intenciones. The event features guitar improvisation and abstract versions of traditional American and Mexican songs. There will also be a talk by editors of Músicos en la Ciudad de México. Again, that's Musicians in Mexico City on Wednesday, February 6th at 7 p.m. at the Clinton Street Theater, 2522 Southeast Clinton Street in Portland. More information is available at kboo.fm on the right-hand side of the homepage under Community Events.
It is 5:03, and coming up next we have KBOO Evening News. KBOO programming is made possible by KBOO listener members and support from Gazelle Consulting, providing HIPAA compliance and IT security services to businesses throughout Portland and across the West Coast, including HIPAA consulting, software and risk assessments, and training. More information online at gazelleconsulting.org.
And now, your daily volunteer-produced community newscast, the KBOO Evening News.
Coming up on the KBOO Evening News, Oregonians rally in Salem for the new clean energy bill.
Schools across the country participate in Black Lives Matter in schools this week to kick off Black History Month.
The Portland City Council votes to give a settlement to an officer who fatally shot an unarmed black teen.
Good evening. This is the KBOO Evening News for Wednesday, February 6th, 2019. I'm Rachel Hartley.
And I'm Leslie McLam. The Portland City Council today voted to authorize an agreement with the Central East Side Industrial Council for an enhanced service district. Opponents of the measure say it will serve to further gentrify the area and push out houseless people who have nowhere to go. We'll have a full report on that later, this hour on News from the Boo. Since KBOO is located in the affected neighborhood and was one of the groups that testified today. Also in City Council today, the council voted to approve a settlement Portland police officer, Greg Lewis, who was let go after killing Quanice Hayes.
We cannot continue to give paydays to police officers who aren't worthy to wear a uniform representing the city of Portland. Yet we do it over and over and over again. If we don't start drawing a line in the sand, we might as well just keep writing checks to police officers who should not ever be on Portland police force. This afternoon, we'll hear from OIR, who investigates death in custodies again. And again, as part of that same cycle of a lack of accountability by people who are sworn to protect and serve. I will not support this proposal because I absolutely believe that we have a responsibility as a representative government to fight for the people and not to do what's the most convenient, less horrible thing to do. In my mind, please know that they can negotiate over and over and over again and get these huge paydays for sitting on their butt at home. I have to remember that when Mayor Sam Adams was here with Fresh Hour, he fought as hard as he possibly could, and the public knew that.
We fought.
Okay, we fought.
There were three of us.
But the point was is that the police commissioner made a commitment that he was going to fight it as far as they could take it. We ultimately ended up with another police commissioner that just gave up. I'm not willing to give up. It is absolutely not right that this man gets one penny additional from the city of Portland, and I maintain my no vote.
There's no question in my mind that Greg Lewis should have been fired immediately for his racist and irresponsible remarks. Given the racial disparities in the use of lethal force against African Americans in Portland and across the country, it's especially unforgivable. This is why I was prepared initially to reject the settlement proposal, just on principle. However, as we know, when it comes to disciplining officers, the city almost never prevails in arbitration, despite how egregious the behavior was. This is wrong. It undermines council's ability to hold officers accountable and erodes the community's trust, and it is just an embarrassment to the city. There's no good fight to fight when the game is rigged. In light of this broken structure, I'm supporting the settlement for the reasons articulated by Commissioners Fritz and Fish, although I do agree philosophically with Commissioner Hardesty. I don't want Greg Lewis to get more money through the arbitration process, which is likely, and I especially do not want him to work for the city ever again. There's only one way we can ensure that. There was no good choice to make here today, and the community has every right to be angry about that. I know I'm angry about it. But soon we will have the opportunity to correct this ridiculous problem in not being able to fire bad actors from our police bureau. I was frustrated to read so much misinformation in the press, so I want to take a moment to correct some of it. This settlement was not the result of some kind of secret collusion between the majority of council. That is simply false. The truth is we frequently do not see items that come out of bureaus which are outside of our portfolios until the same time as the public, which is Fridays before council. When we look at the facts and use our best judgment, there's been no attempt to sneak this through or bypass the public process. As far as I know, it was always coming to council for a vote. I know my colleagues and I are united in our desire to have better choices in front of us in the future. Finally, I want to thank the officers who broke rank and reported Greg Lewis. Your actions helped to restore some of the trust that was broken by his words, and I appreciate your leadership, and I hope that others follow suit so we can root out individuals who have no business serving in our bureau or policing our streets. I vote aye.
Wheeler?
So I gave a long speech last time, and I'm going to let that stand. But suffice it to say, I support the settlement. I vote aye. The ordinance is adopted.
Officer Lewis also made controversial statements during roll calls with Portland police officers in which he said, in what he later claimed was sarcasm, quote, "We should just go out and kill black people," end quote. In the settlement, Lewis will receive $100,000 in back pay.
A white police officer who shot a young black man in Alabama will face no charges. E.J. Bradford was 21 when he was shot and killed by an Alabama police officer during an active shooter attack at a shopping mall. Bradford was not the shooter, but was an innocent bystander who was shot as he ran, in an apartment, act of selflessness and bravery, towards an active shooter roaming the mall. Bradford was a young black man and a licensed gun owner. The officer, identified only as Officer One, claims that he mistook Bradford for the shooter, apparently based on the color of his skin and his possession of a gun. Alabama's Attorney General announced Tuesday the officer will face no charges in Bradford's killing.
Following last night's State of the Union address, in which Trump made his usual false claims about crime by immigrants and praised the country's oil and gas production, which makes global warming worse, he managed to go through the speech without mentioning climate change at all. Perhaps the biggest applause came when Trump mentioned the surge of new women in Congress, a surge which came about in opposition to Trump and his policies. Democratic women dressed in white in honor of the suffragettes cheered when he mentioned the record numbers of women in Congress. The rebuttal to the State of the Union was given by Stacey Abrams, the Democratic contender for Georgia's governorship in 2018. If successful, she would have been the first female African-American to hold a governor's office in U.S. history. Her narrow loss in November was followed by claims of voter suppression and manipulation during the state's election for governor. Many saw this effort to suppress votes for Abrams as based in the state's deep history of racism. On Tuesday, Abrams made history as the first black woman to deliver a State of the Union response, representing the Democratic Party in her rebuttal to Trump's Tuesday State of the Union address. Abrams made voting access a central focus of her response, along with the party's plans to lower health care costs and reshape immigration policy towards greater inclusivity. Abrams is a top contender in Georgia's 2020 Senate race. If elected, she would become Georgia's first African-American senator. In an interview a day after Abrams' rebuttal, Trump said it would be a, quote, mistake for Abrams to enter the 2020 Senate race against wealthy Senate incumbent David Perdue, a former Dollar General CEO. While she has not announced her intentions for 2020, the speech by Abrams Tuesday night may seal her spot as the Democratic Party's next star.
Four Patriots players, including Daron Harmon and twin players Jason and Devin McCurdy, say they would not attend a White House visit if invited. Harmon said in an interview, quote, "They don't want me there," adding he was excited about the possibility of instead meeting former President Barack Obama. The players' White House boycott comes a year, the Philadelphia Eagles declined to visit after their 2018 Super Bowl win, citing Trump's racist policies and attacks on Colin Kaepernick, who famously chose to kneel during the national anthem in protest of police brutality toward African Americans.
Around 800 people gathered at the Oregon State Capitol today to rally in support of the Clean Energy Jobs Bill. The bill would implement a cap-and-trade policy on fossil fuel emissions in the state. After a video address by Al Gore, Governor Kate Brown addressed the crowd.
We know that climate change threatens the beauty and bounty of Oregon. It threatens our communities, our culture, and of course our economy. We are certainly experiencing the impacts of climate change every single day in Oregon. I don't know if there's anybody here from the Rogue Valley. My understanding is that smoke inundated the Rogue Valley for over 6 weeks this summer. Not okay. And you might not know this, but 90% of our state is already impacted by drought, and it's actually February, which is crazy. I just had a first drought declaration from one of the eastern Oregon counties come to my desk. And it is the warmest year in Oregon since 1895. 1895, not 1985, 1895. Certainly our tourism and our recreational outdoor industries and of course our businesses across the state have suffered from the devastating impacts of wildfire over the last couple of years. We've been working really hard to make sure that our businesses and our communities have the tools and the resources they need to recover from the impacts of wildfire. We're working hard to make sure that our most vulnerable communities, our communities of color, our low-income communities, and our rural communities, we know that they are feeling the impacts of global climate change worse than anyone else, and we have to make sure that we mitigate the impacts for these communities over the next several months. So, are you guys ready to take action? Are you ready to cap greenhouse gas emissions and invest in our underserved communities? Well, I have to tell you, your voices make a critical difference here in Salem. Your participation today conveys both the urgency and the opportunity to our legislators across the state. Your voices show that Oregonians from all across the state want us to move to a carbon-free future. Are you guys with me? Are you ready to make Oregon the second state in the entire country to pass a comprehensive statewide greenhouse gas reduction program? I think we all know that Oregon is a pretty small state, but I truly believe that we can lead the rest of the country. Are you ready to kickstart the rest of the country? We can't do it without your voices. Are you ready to use your voices? All right. Well, thank you so much for coming out today. I am so excited to have the opportunity to sign House Bill 2020. That is our Clean Energy Jobs Bill. Are you guys ready to help get it passed?
That was Oregon Governor Kate Brown speaking today to a crowd of people lobbying in support of the Clean Energy Jobs Bill. While most environmental groups in Oregon support the so-called Clean Energy Jobs Bill, some progressives say it does not go far enough. The Democratic Socialist Party says there should be a cap on carbon emissions without the trade component that allows companies to trade credits in order to emit more carbon.
The U.S. Army has acknowledged that their mass killing of birds known as cormorants has not succeeded in increasing salmon populations as they promised it would. Between 2015 and 2017, the U.S. Army Corps of Engineers killed thousands of double-crested cormorants on the East Sand Island near the mouth of the Columbia River. They claimed that killing the birds who feed on young salmon would help more salmon make it to the Pacific Ocean. 2 years later, there were nearly as many cormorants as before the massacre, but they have moved upriver. And because the range of fish and crustaceans available to the birds is now much smaller, several miles from the ocean, each bird is eating more salmon than before. Bob Salinger, director of Conservation for the Aberdeen Society of Portland said that he thinks this will go down as one of the really significant failures in wildlife management in recent decades.
Oregon's Department of State lands extended their usual 30-day period to 60 days for public comments on the proposed fracked gas pipeline to Coos Bay's Jordan Cove, and they received about 45,000 comments. The majority of the comments are opposed to the 229-mile LNG pipeline across Southwest Oregon, proposed by a Canadian company. DSL officials held a series of public meetings in January to gather input, where thousands showed up to testify. The agency will assess the impacts of this pipeline crossing nearly 500 waterways, including horizontal drilling under the Coos, Rogue, and Klamath rivers, and dredging in and around Coos Bay. The pipeline and its connected LNG storage and shipping facility, which will require more and regular dredging for the ships taking the LNG to Asia, would be one of the state's largest infrastructure projects ever. Various versions of this project have been proposed and opposed for 15 years, creating controversy in job-poor Southwest Oregon.
In Mission, Texas, the National Butterfly Center's director, Marina Trevino-Wright, says they are preparing to file a draft emergency restraining order against the federal government in an ongoing effort to halt construction of a border wall, which would demolish the center. The Customs and Border Protection Agency and the Army Corps of Engineers have already awarded a $145 million contract for the first 6 miles of a border levee system in Texas's Rio Grande Valley. That area includes land designated for the protection of endangered species and for the gravesites of Native American peoples. This past October, historic preservation and environmental laws were circumvented in order to expedite the construction of the controversial barriers. Construction is slated to begin sometime mid-February.
You're listening to the KBOO Evening News. Stay tuned after this newscast for an in-depth report on, well, at 6, it's Kitchen Table Conversations. Then at 7, it's Keeping It Real. Tonight's weather is partly cloudy with a low around 24. Tomorrow's weather will be a 10% chance of showers with a high of 41. Today in history. In 1952, after a long illness, King George VI of Great Britain and Northern Ireland died, making his 27-year-old daughter, Queen Elizabeth II. The quote of the day is from former President Ronald Reagan, whose 108th birthday is today. There are no constraints on the human mind, no walls around the human spirit. No barriers to our progress except those we ourselves erect.
On Monday, February 4th, patrons of Burnside Brewery discovered a lock and a sign on the building claiming, in quote, "As you know, the landlord has not been paid in months." The brewery's Facebook page only mentioned being closed for a snow day. On Tuesday, employees discovered that they were out of a job. Workers shared a screenshot of a Reddit post, which suggested that brewery staff should file for employment. The Reddit screenshot also says that the brewery is, in quote, "no longer operational," and employees would receive their wages, in quote, "as soon as possible." Payroll was supposed to be scheduled for this Friday. As of this afternoon, the owners of Burnside Brewery have not yet responded to Willamette Weekly, who broke the story, for comment. There is also no official statement on the brewery's website yet. According to Willamette Weekly, there is also a lien on the possessions inside of the building. If this affects you or someone you know, Portland Jobs for Justice might be able to provide resources. Their website is www.jwjpdx.org.
Massachusetts Senator Elizabeth Warren today formally and publicly apologized for claiming Native American heritage. Warren said she was sorry for increasing confusion about tribal citizenship and tribal sovereignty and for harm she caused. She also apologized for not being mindful of this decades ago, adding that tribes and only tribes determine citizenship. Warren was asked why she had listed Native American heritage on her Texas bar application. She responded that she had been told of Native American heritage through family stories. The Massachusetts senator again clarified that she was not a tribe member by saying, quote, "There is an important distinction of tribal citizenship. I am not a member of a tribe," end quote.
Freshman Congress member Rashida Tlaib has invited her fellow Congress members to join her on a trip to the West Bank, which is one of two Palestinian territories occupied by the Israeli military. A third territory, the Golan Heights, is also occupied by Israel after it was seized from Syria by Israeli forces. Tlaib made the offer to her fellow Congress members after rejecting a free trip to Israel that is provided to all Congress members and senators by the American Israel Public Affairs Committee, or AIPAC, or AIPAC. The AIPAC lobbying group is the third most powerful lobbying organization in the U.S., behind weapons and drug manufacturers. Tlaib is the first Palestinian American elected to Congress and has family members who live under the Israeli military occupation in the West Bank. During the congressional delegation, she will expose members of Congress to the realities of Palestinian life under Israeli military occupation. This includes undrinkable water, food shortages, and a decimated healthcare system, a destroyed economy, and military checkpoints that prevent access to schools, work, and hospitals.
We have a trigger warning on this next story. Please be advised, the next story references sexual assault. A Nobel laureate and former president of Costa Rica, Oscar Arias Sanchez, has been accused of sexual assault. In a criminal complaint, Alexandra von Harald, a nuclear disarmament activist and psychiatrist, accused Arias Sanchez of sexually assaulting her during a meeting held at his home in 2014. She cited the rise of the Me Too movement as inspiration for coming forward to share her experience. Arias Sanchez is one of Costa Rica's most powerful figures. This accusation comes in the midst of a trend of increasing violence against women in Central America, and Von Harald said in a statement that coming forward was, quote, "the right thing to do, even if it destroys me," end quote.
This week, February 4th to the 8th of 2019, educators and students from across the country are taking part in the second annual Black Lives Matter at School Week. This is a national week of action held during the first week of the February of each month. The goal is to organize young people to learn about structural racism, Black identity, and the history of resistance to white supremacy. Organizers of the Black Lives Matter at School Week say that thousands of students and teachers participated last year in the events across the country. This year, they expect a similar level of participation. Here's a segment of the video presented by the group to organize this week of action.
What is happening in our schools today is heartbreaking.
This is one of the racist rants discovered Monday at Oak Park River Forest High School.
Our kids are being called the N-word. We have white students who think it's okay to come to school for Halloween with a KKK mask.
1.6 million children in this country go to a school where there's a police officer but no counselor.
Educators in Washington State are 90% white.
I'm not getting the education that I need as a Black male.
The people who have done the conquering have been the ones that we've been lauding in school.
Kobe, who's in the ninth grade at Pearland High School, was studying immigration when he read this in his textbook, a comment that referenced African slaves as workers.
All I ever see is us being slaves, you know? Like, why don't you ever teach me, you know, how we fought back? Because I know my people are strong.
A referee at a high school wrestling match in New Jersey told a wrestler he had to cut his dreadlocks or forfeit the match.
I see people around me who are hurt, and it is wrong to not speak up.
Black Lives Matter at School is a declaration that Black students deserve to be taught the truth and that their lives have value.
It gives students not only of color, but of other races and ethnicities a chance to see different cultures.
We have lessons for every single day, Monday through Friday. So there's about 2 to 3 principals per day that are connected.
We participated in this last year, and a lot of feedback we got from educators who have never really experienced ethnic studies in the classroom was that their students were more engaged in this content than they had ever seen before.
I learned so much through that really empowered me as a Black man. This is probably the first time I really was excited about school. You know, it's something that I'm passionate about now.
You're listening to the KBOO Evening News for Wednesday, February 6th, 2019. Here are the main points again. Oregonians rally in Salem for the new clean energy bill. Schools across the country participate in Black Lives Matter in schools this week to kick off Black History Month. The Portland City Council votes to give a settlement to an officer who fatally shot an unarmed Black teen. This is a volunteer-produced newscast, and we encourage your participation. Call us with your breaking news stories and tips at 503 231